Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. Good afternoon. In today's podcast, we will be talking to Mr. Scott Bennett. He is the founder of Cyber One Intel, a leading cybersecurity firm in the Cleveland, Ohio area. Scott, thanks for your time, and let's go ahead and get started, please.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, we looked up your bio, did some background snooping on you. We didn't do a background check or anything, but we kind of looked you up on Google. And it seems like you have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us kind of the highlights of your career and kind of how you, where you are right now and kind of how that led you to the path we're on today?
Yeah, sure. You know, it's a very niche kind of deal within the cybersecurity realm. I pretty much deal with open source intelligence, and that is essentially like a little bit of cyber investigation, and as well as it's an initial part of, I would say, penetration testing in cybersecurity, having a good open source basis whenever you're kind of start up any kind of cybersecurity is a great advantage to have. And I wasn't in the cybersecurity field actually originally. My main background in my education is actually in emergency management. I was a firefighter EMT in California for years. I did a flight care service. I went to Haiti for about a year. And actually when I was in Haiti is when I discovered the power of open source intelligence. The country is in a lot of civil unrest constantly, and we need to figure out how to move our ambulances and our aircraft around the country. And every now and then they have what they call is manifestations. If you're from America, we call that protests, essentially. And they block down huge sections of the city where you just can't pass. And what we would do is we would monitor various elements of WhatsApp groups, online, people talking about it, so we could plan accordingly on how to dispatch our ambulances. So really it was using open source means to try to track all of these protests to really have real in-demand threat intelligence. And that really excited me, being able to do that real-time threat intelligence and have it actually be applied to emergency management was very fulfilling for me. And I took what I learned there and I just started developing my own open source intelligence background and doing it as a hobbyist for a couple of years until I actually started Cyber One. I worked as just a freelancer doing investigations for private investigators. And then eventually I transitioned from a freelancer to doing it full time and got my business license in Ohio, and we have some contractors who work for us. And our main clientele is private investigators, as well as some cybersecurity firms doing their open source intelligence work.
Okay, excellent. Now, is Cyber One, is this a company you kind of did on your own, or do you have other partners kind of help you out with it?
Yeah, right now it is just me. I do have another partner, and he is in the cybersecurity field. He's more in the cybersecurity than I am. I deal with mostly open source intelligence for any web development or coding and so forth he takes care of. So he's kind of my partner.
Okay. Now, how long have you been in business?
We've been in business for about a year now. We started just when COVID hit, actually. So it was probably the worst time to start a business. But
right.
It's been working through the COVID pandemic.
Well, how has business been for you?
Business has been great. It's actually lucky that my businesses were able to do fully remote working, so it hasn't affected it that much. The only thing that's affected is actually meeting our clients face-to-face for the initial visits. So talking to the clients over the phone for the initial time or on Zoom is a little bit different than maybe meeting them in Ohio somewhere and having a meeting that way. But really it's been unaffected in that part. And a lot of companies have actually kind of wind down their business, the private investigators, for surveillance and stuff like that, and what they do. So their work has went down quite a bit during COVID, and it's actually starting to ramp up now. So we're starting to get more clients because they're starting to get back into the offices and take on more cases. So as far as my clientele goes, you know, it was a little bit slow start, but now that you know, things are getting, businesses are getting back to work and people are getting back into the office. It's been really great.
Okay, excellent. Now, who is your typical customer base you're trying to penetrate? Is it the SMBs, the larger like Fortune 500, federal government, state, local government agencies, or kind of mishmash of everything? Who is your, like, your bread and butter right now?
My bread and butter right now is other licensed private investigators. We do kind of, since I'm not a licensed private investigator myself, we have to only work with other licensed investigators. It would be illegal for me to take on a case from an individual that would need open source intelligence skills. Like, for example, if somebody came to me and said, hey, my babysitter, I would love a background check on them. Could you, like, do an investigation on them? I'd have to turn down the work or refer them to a peer that I work with. So what we do is we offer services to private investigator in the investigation realm, but also for individual clients, we offer privacy services. So another thing we do is called privacy audits. So a lot of our clients reach out and they're worried that what information they have online could lead to maybe them being harassed in real life, like taking the harassment offline and approaching to a real world, like maybe they might harass them at their house or get their phone number. And we will actually kind of portray ourselves as the attacker and figure out what information that we could find online that could lead to their doorstep. Because really, people don't understand that every little bit over throughout the years, you're leaving internet breadcrumbs of your life. And with enough work, we could find those breadcrumbs and put together a great picture of your address, your home, your family, and different ways an attacker or somebody who's looking to harass you would use that information to for a little ill intent. And so we offer privacy audits for the clients, and we send them comprehensive of reports and everything. And it's anything from either they're being harassed online or their significant other has posted nude photos of them online and they're using them maliciously. And we can go in and submit takedown requests and work together with law enforcement to kind of combat that. And for that, we use DMCA takedown requests, and there's various means to really help our clients in that realm. So we get a lot of privacy clients in that orientation and a lot of, you know, millionaires and stuff like that who really don't want to be found easily. So like, for example, like an Instagram influencer, you know, maybe they're starting to take off and you're getting some creepy people, or maybe some people aren't happy with what they're doing. They want to make sure that what they do stays online and doesn't encroach on their real world and real life, like stuff they do every day. So that's a lot of what we do, as well as we work with cybersecurity companies that does penetration testing for corporations. So if they're doing network penetration testing, if they mention that they, oh yeah, we would like to do, we would like to run a training for our office to make sure, you know, they're not getting phished, or make sure they're not reusing passwords, make sure they're not opening up emails they shouldn't, or picking up USBs outside and sticking them in their computer, or maybe they're using their work emails for personal things, and then maybe there's a data leak, a breach with their work emails, and their passwords are just online. We find that information for them through open source means. So like for me, my email, scottb@cyber1intel, if I run that through the dark web and various, like Have I Been Pwned or Intellix, and I notice it's been breached, I'll find those emails and find the password and I'll know to change it. And I do that for corporations as a side business to other penetration testing business, as like Binary Defense is also in Ohio and stuff like that.
Okay, so do you do pen testing like in the true sense also? Or you use like Metasploit, Nexus thing to do a, do you do like red teaming, blue teaming, that kind of thing too? Or
yeah, we definitely offer that. We have contractors that aren't fully employed with us, but if we have a customer that says, "Hey, you know, do you know anybody who can do that portion of it?" We subcontract that work out, but it's under the umbrella of CyberOne that we offer. But we focus on the open source intelligence aspect. And like my neighbor is in cybersecurity, and that's what he does full time. And we contract out work with him, and he's my partner in that.
Okay, excellent. Now let's get into the nuts and bolts of open source intelligence. So, what exactly is OSINT? As I said, I've written a couple of articles on this, and when I was first reading about it, it really kind of confused me because it seems like it's a big tool set that cyber attackers can use to really, you know, unfortunately, cyber stalk their victims. But also, it can be used for the good way, like what you're doing, you know, the good guys. So, for our audience, what really is open source intelligence, and can you define like what it's about and how it's used and how it can be used both for the good and bad?
Yeah, I mean. OSINT is a niche within cybersecurity, but within the OSINT realm, there's also niches within OSINT. Some people are really into doing real-time threat intelligence. So the scope of that would mean, say there's an event happening in the area. We need to figure out who's talking about this event and seeing if anybody's making any threats about the event going on. And they're posting them online. Maybe they're in – are you familiar with the social media platform called Gab?
I've not heard of it, no.
Well, that is used a lot. So it's basically a free speech platform, and there's a lot of hate in it, and it's unregulated. And a lot of people talk about, oh, we're going to go harass this place, or we're going to go have a protest in front of this place. And that would be real-time threat monitoring, is we would gather that intelligence, compile it in a report, and cooperate with law enforcement on it. And that's a niche inside open source intelligence. You're essentially using passive means online to find information. So anything that is publicly available, what I'm doing is something that anybody could do with the right training. You just know the methods and the means to obtain that information. And that's a niche in of it. Some people like threat intelligence. And some people like threat intelligence, and then some people like the harassment side of it, and then the penetration side of it, more cybersecurity focused. And I would say the leading industry right now is investigative journalism. There is a company called Bellingcat. They are probably the industry standard. If you're working in OSINT, they are the company to strive to work for. They're kind of the standard when it comes to it. And they do a lot. They call it open source journalism, pretty much, and they've coined that term. What they do is they do a lot of overseas work and hold other countries accountable for what they put out. So, for example, in Russia, they were claiming that they were doing airstrikes on ISIS-controlled portions. And Bellingcat found out through various means, they did a collaborative effort of various videos that were like videos on the ground of the incidents, as well as pictures and satellite imagery before and after the strikes. And Russia was putting out completely false propaganda, and they compiled an investigative report comparing satellite images, footage on the ground, statements from the Russian government, and they put it all in a really easily digestible report, and that really caused waves. And they're kind of the industry standard for that. And that would be like geospatial intelligence. So pretty much just looking over footage and comparing it, finding landmarks in the footage, and just really deep diving on imagery. And that's another niche within it. There's a lot of different things with open source intelligence. But if I could boil it all down to something easy, it's pretty much going through public records, anything online that you're all passive that you're doing. So anybody could do it. You could do it. You just pretty much, it's a fancy Google search. If you're trying to break it down into something simple, you can find a lot of stuff just by searching on Google. Like you searched my name. You figured out what I did, what I'm about. You looked at my blog. That's all open source intelligence. You're pretty much just gathering intel through online means. So what we do is we take that a step further. And we don't look at the pretty much like the first layer of everything is like Google and stuff. We look into the nitty gritty. So, for example, we would look on your website. We might look up your Whois details. And your Whois details will see who the website's registered under. And it might be registered privately, but we would go back on your history and see, okay, did you privatize your website every single year? Or maybe you slipped up 1 year when you renewed your website and you put your real name and your real address and you don't even know it. So we would go that further and find that information. I worked for a medical clinic that did that exact same thing. Is they are a psychiatric clinic. The main doctor is really well known, and he did not know that his real address, his real phone number, his name, was actually tied to his website in the domain registration details. And we were able to find that and correct that issue because just the base of the clientele he has, that's important that that information isn't on there. And a lot of people don't know that, that just those things are on the internet about him and then about just you and I.
Right, right.
Is this tracking so far?
Yeah, so OSINT's really, is it more of a methodology or are there other specific tools that you can use that are, like, for example, I brought up, like, you know, Nessus and Metasploit, those are specific pen testing tools that you use for your red teaming.
Mm-hmm.
But are there specific software packages that you can use for OSINT?
It really is. So in the community, when you're starting out, everyone goes through the same thing. Like when anybody gets into OSINT, they always want to know, oh, what tool is this? I want a tool for that, tool for this, tool for that. But a lot of the seasoned people, you're right, it is more a methodology than anything. The tools are great and it will speed up your processes so much, but learning how to use your intelligence and pivot off that information is the methodology. It's just what it is pretty much. But for the tools, are you familiar with Sherlock?
I think I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, there's Sherlock. There's a bunch of tools. There's Holy. A lot of them are Python-related tools and scripts. A lot of them are scrapers. And there's companies that are actually out there that do a lot of the work for you, but they are inaccurate some of the time, and you can't take them at face value, and you still have to do a redundancy check and look them up manually because the tools are doing pretty much everything that you'd be doing manually. It just speeds up the process. Like, for example, there's a program called Holkey, and it's a Python script, and it will run an email through 400 different various websites to see if that email is registered on them. And how it will do that is that it will go to the forgotten email, and it will look at when you type, say, so for example, if you go to Facebook and you say, oh, I forget my stuff, it might show you the first two letters of your email and the last two letters of your email and then whatever .gmail.com, right? But if I have your full email, this script will run it through like 400 different websites, like you lost your password, and compare that email, the little portions of the characters it gives you, to your email that you put in the program. And it will tell you if they're registered. So they might be registered on crazy different websites that you wouldn't even not know to check, and it will run them in 5-10 minutes. And that will save you a lot of time than doing that manually, because you could do it manually, but the methodology is still the same. Does that make sense?
Okay, cool, excellent. Now, can you just reiterate, I'm sure you've said this before, and what is the one area that you specialize in the OSINT world?
I would say I would specialize in the investigation portion and working with private investigators. That is our main focus currently, but there's a lot of different aspects we have under our umbrella. We just realized there was a market for our need in the open source intelligence field within the private investigation realm. A lot of private investigators are really old school, and they don't realize the importance of online investigations and really dedicating time to cyber investigations and using open source intelligence means. And they want to push pretty much surveillance. You know, you're sitting on somebody's house for 8 hours a day, seeing what they're doing, when really your time and your money could be best spent on just online investigations. We work in a lot of fraud. That is our workman's comp fraud. So people say, oh, I got injured on my job and I cannot work. I can't work now. So now the government, like the job is paying them to sit at home. And it's illegal for them to take up another job while saying they're disabled, you know? So what we would do is we would look online and see, oh, are they playing basketball on Saturday and posting about it when they're saying that they have an ankle injury and can't go back to work? They might have not posted that video. So that's another thing. Their Facebooks, their online presence might be clean, right? Because they might know that they might get investigated. But every time, their family and friends, that's where it's at. Their friend might post a photo of them at an event or a video about them and not even tag them. We would find that information. So none related. Then maybe if somebody posted they were at, you know, playing soccer or this and that, and they have no idea that this video is even taken of them. And we would compile that information and send it to the private investigators. And then we start pretty much an action plan based off that evidence. And then they would put a surveillance person on that subject.
Well, so it seems like you do a lot of social media tool scraping. That really seems to be a lot of what you do too, right?
Yeah, within the film, within the realm, it's called SOCMIT, which is social media intelligence. So there's a lot of buzzwords relating to the intelligence field, but social media is a niche within it that there's companies that just focus on social media.
Okay. Now, with your background of all that you can do, have you done any engagements with the Secret Service or the FBI? Have they contracted you up?
Nothing like that. We haven't looked in that realm yet. There's a lot of restrictions when it comes to working with the government. There's a lot of requirements with education, clearances for background checks, and so forth. With working with the government, you have to have a certain level most of the time. And to get that clearance, you have to pretty much have a job with the government first, or you got to be ex-military and have the clearance first. If you have your clearance, you could work really easily because it's very, very hard, and it's a very long process to get that clearance because it's a lot of money.
Right.
They have to hire their own investigators just to get the basic level clearance. But we are looking into working with local police departments. So I am California raised, and I live in a very hometown with a very small police departments, and we are in contact with them to try to do a public-private partnership where we can do work with them at whatever rate they're okay with, even pro bono, because we would like to get that connection. And they don't do a lot of open source intelligence work just because either they're short-staffed, they don't have the budget for it, but we really think that their investigations could benefit from what we can provide, and they believe it too, and we're working out kind of the legalities behind it and what we want to make sure everything's above board before we pursue it further. But that is something we're looking into for local municipalities like sheriff's departments and police departments.
Well, do you have maybe, I mean, as you said, it's a long and arduous process, but do you have any plans of maybe getting that background certification so you can work with the federal government one of these days, or it's still kind of a background thing for you right now?
For now, it's put to the wayside, but ultimately that is our goal. You know, that would be the goal, would to work with governments and really get our foot in the door as far as we could. That is another gold standard, you know, working with the government and seeing what investigations they're doing. There's a lot of companies that if I wanted to work for as an employee and they already have the clearances, because a lot of the governments, they do, you know, there's companies that do exactly what I do and they're already contracted with the government. And to get in contact with them and use their clearances, that's also an option for us. But right now for our company, we're not at the place yet to even think about working with the government for sure.
Yeah, okay. Now, how does OSINT relate to cybersecurity? I think you may have touched on that, but can you kind of do a little bit more of a deeper dive on that?
Yeah, you know, how it relates to cybersecurity, one of the first for penetration testing and network testing, it's one of the first aspects, I would say, of an initial red teaming event, because you got to figure out who your target is. If you are tasked with just like trying to penetrate someone's corporation or network, whatever way possible, you know, a good open source intelligence investigation at the beginning will save you so much time later on. Let me just give an example here. So let's say you're looking to breach a network for a corporation that deals with banking, right? Let's say they have 150 employees. You're looking at every aspect of how you can engage to penetrate the test, the network, breach their servers, breach their computers. You're trying to steal any information from the company that would be damaging. So for an open source investigation company, what I would do is I would start with LinkedIn and see what members are registered on LinkedIn for this company. I would get their names. I would scrape their details. Do they have any public emails posted? And then I would look at them, see which ones are at what level, which ones are managers, which ones are lower level people, which ones post stuff online periodically and pretty frequently, which ones are older. I would try to find their emails and run their emails and see maybe are they breached. Do they have any breached emails out there and their passwords are online? Maybe I try those passwords on their login details, on their corporation, on their businesses, on their servers. That's all open source intelligence, and that's the beginning of a penetration tester's job. That's the easiest way. I would say that the hardest element that you could do is it's the human factor. no matter what it is, you know, coding, scripting, the network, all that stuff is secure, but the weakest link in the chain is the human element. They're you know, because they are going to reuse passwords. They're going to sign up for maybe websites they shouldn't have under their business emails, and then those get breached, and then those are online. And your investigation, your penetration test could be 30 minutes because people's passwords could just be online and they haven't changed them. And then you have a login, and maybe they don't have two-factor authentication, you know. And that's how open source investigation really starts with cybersecurity, because you just get those details first, and then you start, and then you work your way from there. You know, work smarter, not harder. You can work all day trying to breach their network through scripts and coding and various attacks, or you could just find somebody's password that is leaked online, and then you're in their network just like that. So that's one way that open source intelligence can be used in the cybersecurity realm, as well as looking at their network and their website. So everything to do with a website is open source. So maybe there's pages on their website that they don't mean to have to be public. There's been instances like that, or maybe web pages that are under construction that have some details that maybe they shouldn't have. Then we look at those. We could scan their website for vulnerabilities. That's all open source intelligence. So Metasploit, exactly what you were saying, that scans websites, that scans various, and shows you what vulnerabilities there is in them. That is all open source intelligence. You're building an attack plan with open source intelligence.
Excellent. Okay. Well, now, when you wake up in the morning, what is your typical work day like? I mean, the latest from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. if that's just such a day for you. Tell us what you do every day. What's average for you?
So what I do every day, you know, we do a big chunk of our day is trying to reach out to more clients and educate people, and then also working on the current tasks we have at hand. So I have set cases with our clients that I work on, and I get called throughout the day. So we're open from 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and as well as 10 to 2 on Saturday. We take calls 24 hours a day. If it's a privacy emergency, we're available 24 hours a day. So if you're having an issue where somebody's, like, you're getting harassed and you think that it's escalated and you don't know what to do and you just need somebody to consult with, we're open 24 hours a day for those emergencies as well. So we just constantly are working on cases, talking to clients, doing consultations with various clients. People will just call us and ask, hey, I'm having a privacy issue. Do you mind if I just talk to you about it? And we might give them, examples of what they can do and what we suggest they would do and stuff like that. And we get phone calls periodically about that. And those are fine, you know. Those are just casual, you know, no obligation to purchase our service or anything. We get those pretty common as well. And then we're also traveling around Ohio to different cybersecurity firms and getting in contact with them and building a relationship as well.
Okay, excellent. Now, are you just local to Ohio, or do you have clients like in other parts of the U.S. that you do traveling, or where's like your typical client? Where are they?
Yeah, so we're based in Ohio, based in Cleveland, Ohio. That's where our business license is. But we also do worldwide, so we have clients in Florida and pretty much throughout the United States. We are less international, just that we are not hyper-focused on it. So we would contract any international investigation out to another business that would specialize in it. But we mostly deal with USA-based, you know, clients and stuff like that. Lots of people in Florida. In California, I maintain a residence in California as well. So we just this weekend, I was meeting with some clients actually that I've never even talked to since I've moved to Ohio, and we actually have met up for the first time in California since I've been down here, and it's been great.
Wow, excellent. Okay. Well, that leads me to the next thing. Do you have any customer success stories or any client testimonials that you can share with us? I was talking to you earlier this week about that one thing on your blog site where you tracked this one truck down. Can you talk more about that and any other kind of related stories like that? Or do you have any cloak and dagger stories, actually, like James Bond doing any kind of stories?
Yeah, that initial story where that was actually a Reddit poster. Familiar with Reddit?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so they're on Reddit. When I was a hobbyist, you know, just doing open source investigations just for fun, just for practicing. There is a subreddit called RBI, which stands for like Reddit Bureau of Investigation. Pretty much people post anything that they want to get looked into on this site, anything from paranormal stuff to maybe their car got hit and their Ring camera captured a license plate, but the license plate is not clear enough, and they're asking anybody on Reddit if they could help identify this license plate, you know, and stuff like that. So somebody posted on there and said, hey, my buddy's work truck got hit, and there's a lot of damage to it, and the person drove away, and it's actually a trucking company, and we have it all on film, but the quality is very poor, and we can't make out any of the markings on it. We just know it's a black truck that you know, destroyed his work vehicle. And I looked into it. He reached out to me, and we had a conversation. I asked him to send over the raw security footage, and I downloaded the footage. I upscaled it. I pulled frames from it, the best frames in the video, because he posted photos, but it's always nice to have the original raw footage, and I could pull the stills and the frames myself. And then I went and comparing the photos and the emblems from the truck to various ones I found online. So if you're looking at the blog, we don't have the photo in front of me, but there's different aspects that you can notice from the security footage. So it is a semi truck. And if you looked at it, noticing there's different niches within the trucking community. So like people do international trucking where they drive from California to Ohio and big semi trucks, and they sleep along the way with cabs, right? And there's some people that only do local big trucking where they only go maybe a town or two over, and they don't have a sleeping unit in back, right? And some people do flatbed trucking, some people do trailers. So there's a bunch of different trucking companies that all do different aspects, right? So if you're looking at the photo, you know, just basing myself, okay, I'm looking at this big truck. I notice it has a sleeper unit in back. Okay, that's a flag right there. That means that they're all over the USA because that person sleeps in the back of the truck. I'm looking at it again. Oh, that's a flatbed trailer. So that person probably transports heavy equipment, right? Okay, though, it's a single trailer truck. So with those three aspects, I have pivot points, what we call in the open source intelligence field is called pivot points. We have a lead, essentially, of what to work off of. So we know this truck travels international, has a sleeping unit, it's a flatbed, probably transports heavy equipment, and as well as it's black, and we have a logo that we cannot make out. We can't make out any of the words or the lettering. So just off that, we could start trying to figure out, like, Googling certain phrases, certain terms, certain keywords, and maybe narrow it down. And then it's a lot of manual work from there and figuring out, okay, matching the logos with different trucking companies throughout the U.S. and such. So that's what we did. It's called, are you familiar with the term Google dorking?
I've read that on your blog site.
Yeah, it's a Google dorking. Essentially, some people use the term. I don't like to use the term because I don't feel it's relevant, but some people say it's essentially called Google hacking. So you're pretty much typing in strings and inputting phrases in those strings. So you would put quotation mark, international trucking company, quotation mark, another quotation mark, flatbed, single trailer, quotation mark, and then the state, quotation mark. And it will pull up all the stuff related to those terms. And that's Google. That's essentially Google dorking. It's more in depth than that, and the strings could get huge and different phrases and such, but we'll keep it simple for now. So that's essentially what I did is, you know, you look at key phrases, and then eventually, you know, I found some that looked very similar to the logo, but I could not get it confirmed that it was this one. And then finally found a trucking company that had the same logo, looked on their website, and then I found their website. From there, I pivoted to their social media. On their social media, they posted that they got a new fleet of trucks in 2019, 2020. And boom, there was a truck, the same logo, the same position of the logos, the same DOT marking. So where it says like DOT hashtag 108, we couldn't find that on the original photo because it was so blurry, but the position was the same. And we're able to find out, okay, this trucking company is actually located completely across the United States, but is the exact same one. And with that information, we're able to compile it, find all the contact details, and send it over to that person. Because that person, his buddy, contacted the police department. They said, hey, there's nothing we could do about it. You know, we don't have the time and the effort to look into that because they can't run a license plate. They can't run any DOT markings. They just see a black semi truck that hit your vehicle in a really low quality security footage. So there's nothing much they could work on. And unfortunately today, you know, police departments don't have the funding to do a lot of the manual labor, like online investigation part. So it gets put to the wayside unless something else comes up, you know, that maybe that truck hit another vehicle and then they use that evidence for further on. So the client took that into their own hands and reached out to a third party like myself who can do the manual labor and has the background to do it efficiently. So a police department who doesn't know the methods and the Google Dorkian and the niches within the trucking community and such, it might take them 12 hours to find like any relevant details. But myself, who's already in the community, who has that skill set already, can maybe find that information out in 3 to 4 hours. You know, it just makes things a lot better. So we sent that information over to him, and I followed up a week later, and the trucking company's insurance completely covered the full vehicle. It was 100% reimbursed. It was a great outcome for the client, you know, that he was able to recoup the damages. And without locating the vehicle and the truck, you know, he might not have been, he just would have been out the money. And the story goes is he started his own business where he's a travel mechanic, and he bought his own work truck, and it was actually less than a week old when the vehicle hit it and totaled it. And so he just started his business, and his main source of revenue is all of a sudden taken from him, and he was actually get fully reversed. So that's a great outcome for the client. So that's just one example of just the power of OSINT and having the methodology and knowing what to do. And, you know, it was just a great outcome.
Now, is there a way you can get trained in OSINT? I mean, it seems like, you know, it's like, it's this big jigsaw puzzle, and where do you get started? Is it just more from you learn from experience, or is there like a boot camp you can go to? How do you pick up this stuff? I mean, how do you know where to get started from? I mean, it's like you are doing detective work, but you don't have maybe the formal training to become a detective. Mm-hmm. Is there a school that you went to? Is there some kind of training that you went to for OSINT?
Yeah, so at first, you know, the OSINT community is growing every day, and it's becoming more of a mainstay, but the community is so amazing. There's a lot of Discords, there's a lot of Slack channels, there's a lot of Reddit communities that focus on, like, free education, because really at the core of it, open source intelligence, if you're staying true to that word, open source, all education is out there for you to learn. There's YouTube videos, there's communities where you can ask questions, because you don't need a really technical background of an education, like a degree, to really do this. If it's open source, anybody could do it. And that is really true to the word. But there is like formal training and certifications. For example, are you familiar with SANS Institute? They are probably a leader in cybersecurity training. So SANS Institute has open source certifications, and you could take the I think it's called the GCIC as well. That's like the national recognized, like, open source intelligence. And they offer classes. But unfortunately, their classes, they're highly regarded as probably the best certifications you could have, but they are very, very expensive. And they are tailored toward, like, if you're already working as a cybersecurity person, and your company would sponsor you for trainings, that is the price structure that SANS is tailored towards. So the trainings are like $7,000 to $10,000 for one training. And they're tailored for corporations who sponsor their employees to take the class. So somebody like me, who was a hobbyist and trying to make the jump from being a hobbyist to doing this as a professional, you know, those classes are expensive. Now I have taken some SANS classes as well as some other classes as well, but they are probably the industry leading on the education portion. There's a couple more training centers. There's the OSINTian, who also does OSINT classes as well as investigation classes. There is the OSINT Curious Project that is hosted by Micah Hoffman. Micah Hoffman is actually the lead instructor at SANS. So if you purchase the SANS course for OSINT, you get Micah Hoffman. And the OSINT Curious Project is all free resources on how to learn how to do these investigations and how to build these OSINT skills. So even though he's offering the paid corporate trainings for OSINT, he is a leading person for doing the free education as well, and he is very, very active. You could hop on the communities right now and talk to him, and he will respond to any questions you have, and the community is so amazing. There's a lot of other classes and certifications. One of the persons that is another industry leader, his name is Michael Bazell. He essentially, my business model and everything is based around his model. He started off as a beat patrol officer, just normal, you know, patrolling and stuff like that. And he started to get into the investigation realm, the online investigation. And he developed one of the first trainings for law enforcement that actually they use as an industry standard for just pretty much what I do with the vehicle and looking it up. He transitioned that from being a beat cop to working for, not the FBI. It might have been the FBI. For working for the FBI in their cyber investigation realm, he was the first person in the 2000s to start doing cyber investigations. And then he retired from the FBI, and now he owns his own service where he's a private investigator as well, but he focused on open source intelligence. And he has his own video trainings, and they're probably, if you're new and you're looking to make the jump from a hobbyist just learning for the free education, I would look at the Michael Bazell's trainings because they're really good priced, and the education you get from it is just amazing. If you're looking to work in my field with working with private investigators in the open source investigation, that is the industry leader in that portion. He has his own business where he does privacy consultants, but he takes it so much further than I would. He practices what he preaches. So he is so privacy. He puts his cell phone in a Faraday cage. You know what that is?
Yep.
Yeah, he puts a cell phone in a Faraday cage. For the listeners, if you don't know what a Faraday cage is, essentially you put it in a box that has tinfoil around it that blocks all cell service. And he will put his cell phone in there before he gets to his home so that his phone doesn't ping on the towers and track his location. That is how far he is in the privacy field. And his clients, he deals with billionaires and millionaires who really want to do full resets. He creates LLCs for them anonymously. He buys anonymous vehicles, anonymous homes. He does those privacy audits, but he takes them so much further. Like he will send a client a $200 gift card and say, "Hey, thanks for going to this convention." And he will look up a client. Oh, they went to this convention for their work 2 weeks ago. I'm going to send them a gift card saying that they won this in a random drawing. He has that gift card details. The client, I got a free gift card. The client will use it at Starbucks and everything like that and next to their homes, and he will triangulate their position just based off the gift card purchases. He takes it so much further than I would, and he is an industry leader in that regard. And it's amazing what he has done. I actually have – he puts out a book called OSINT Open Source – or his website is called IntelTechniques.com, and his book is Open Source Intelligence Techniques, and he's on the 8th edition. Anybody who works in the OSINT field has purchased his book at one point and uses it as a reference pretty much daily. It has all the methods and all the means on how to create these open source intelligence investigations, how to create a virtual machine to house all your tools, how to make sure your operational security is top-notch so you don't get found out by maybe somebody else, like you're snooping on somebody, and make sure nothing gets back to you. The book is amazing. I have the book and I use it daily. And he has a podcast that he puts out weekly by Intel Techniques, and he goes over various privacy focused concepts and new news related to OSINT. So for example, are you familiar with Apple AirTags?
No, I've heard of it.
So yeah, a long time ago, there was this thing called Tile, which you would hook it onto your keychain, on your keys, and you would use your phone via Bluetooth, and it would lead you to your keys in your house if you lost it. That company was called Tile. So now Apple has taken it a step further with these AirTags, and what these AirTags do is essentially the same thing, but a different connectivity process. So these AirTags will actually use your device and ping off of free Wi-Fi and free Bluetooth anywhere. So if you have your Bluetooth on, it will connect to anybody as a mesh network and tell you where it's at. So if you leave your keys at your buddy's house, program that Apple AirPlay tag will ping off the connection any connection in the area that it could grab onto and ping back to your phone and tell you the location. And that is a huge privacy breach because you could put that tile on someone's car, or you could put that tile anywhere. Or what if those tiles get hacked? What if your Apple account gets hacked and you could be tracked 100% of the time if your Apple account gets hacked? And he talks about stuff like that. And that's just like things that I wouldn't even cross my mind that would be a privacy breach or a privacy issue for like clients of mine. He's already thinking about it. And his name's Michael Bazell. If the listeners want to look him up, very interesting what he does. But that's just what he is. As well as I want to talk about something in OSINT related, but a different realm is there is a nonprofit called Trace Labs. Have you heard of that?
No.
So let me talk about Trace Labs real quick. It is a nonprofit that was started by somebody, a Canadian, who worked in the search and rescue field. I also worked in search and rescue in California for a sheriff's department way before my OSINT cybersecurity days. But anyways, the Canadian, he knew there was a need for online investigations, and he did search and rescue, and he knew that police departments do not have the resources to look for missing people. And because in the law enforcement sense, if you're a missing person and you're over the age of 18, it is not illegal to be missing. Like if I just wanted to go missing and I didn't tell anybody, it's not illegal. So law enforcement cannot dedicate resources to finding that person. Are you aware of that? Isn't that very interesting?
Wow. Well, yeah. Wasn't aware of that.
It's unfortunate that is. So he knew that there was a need. So he started a nonprofit called Trace Labs, and he really developed his OSINT skills. And what Trace Labs is they partner with law enforcement agencies around the world. So Canada, United States, the UK, for missing persons cases. And he developed a way to use open source intelligence skills and crowdsourcing to help find these people. So they actually had an event, I think it was the 9th at DEF CON. You're probably familiar with DEF CON, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yep. So they hosted an event at DEF CON. They've gamified using open source intelligence skills to find missing people. So you can join on teams of 1 to 4, and there's 5 cases involved, so 5 different missing people. And you would try to find details on all these missing people to try to find leads to submit to law enforcement. So I think there was like 60 teams of different open source investigators or even journalists. Anybody can do these competitions. And they're like $10 to enter, and you're working with law enforcement. And they've gamified it in a way where they give you the missing persons report that is publicly available, but anybody could see, and that is the start of your investigation. And you're working with your team to try to uncover details that maybe the law enforcement didn't know. And they've gamified it in a way that, for example, let's say it's 5 points if you can find the close friends of the missing person via social media or any way you can find it online. And you submit those leads to a judge, and then they would reward you those points. And at the end of the competition, whoever has the most points wins prizes and stuff like that. And there's also an award for best intelligence. So, for example, if you find, oh, my goodness, this missing person posted on a very obscure social media 3 days ago, and he's been missing for 30 days, that's a huge lead for law enforcement. That means that he's updated a social media account 3 days ago. That's huge. And you would submit that to the judges, and you get points rewarded for it. And they've gamified that. And now it's international. I've been a judge at a few, they call them CTFs. So in the cybersecurity realm, the Capture the Flag events for cybersecurity, I'm sure you're familiar with that. It's pretty much the same thing. It's an OSINT CTF.
Okay,
and they've gamified it in a way that really helps find missing people.
Whoa.
Like I have a statistic for you.
Oh, cool.
One moment. So one of the last events that we did we submitted, there was seven, between all the teams, there was 7,021 submissions processed. So that is all the teams that submitted evidence to judges, 7,000 different ones. There was 90 submissions of day last seen, which means where was this person before they went missing. So, for example, let's say I went missing August 8th. Okay, that was the last time anybody heard of me. But if we found online that really the last time that he was mentioned was August 10th, but law enforcement didn't know that, that'd be a huge lead for law enforcement. And it's just pretty much gaining leads for law enforcement. It's an amazing nonprofit based out of Canada that I would suggest, if anyone's into any kind of open source investigation or intelligence, I would take a look at tracelabs.com and get involved. Even if you have a very low level knowledge of everything, it is very user friendly and the community is great. There's some people that join the competition to win the competition because it is gamified and they want to get first place. And then there's some people that join the competition because they want to solve the case and they're working at a completely different pace than some of the other teams. And then there's some people that really just want to help and get involved and volunteer for a good cause. No matter what skill level you're at, I would suggest tracelabs.com and try to get involved.
And that's a few follow-up questions here. Do you work with forensics experts in this regard?
Yeah, there's we don't have it in-house, but we contract our services out for digital forensics. So if we have a client that is being cyber harassed, and let's say they think their ex is they think their ex put something on the computer to track them, for example. And they need to send their laptop somewhere, or they need to get it checked out to make sure that it's not hacked in any way. We would contract that out to take a look at that, but we would hold the investigation ourselves, and that aspect would get contracted out. We have some in-house digital forensics, so like very, very basic digital forensics that we have in-house, but anything else we would like to direct them to somebody who specializes in it.
Okay. Now, do you come across the risk of data privacy? I mean, has that been an issue that's been raised with you with all this stuff that you're talking about, that you can track this and track that? Has anybody brought the issues of data privacy and keeping their stuff private with confidentiality with you? Or how do you deal with data privacy? Or, I mean, obviously, you have to sign contracts and all that, right? But customer, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Like if a customer, are you looking to see if a customer wants like a privacy audit, or are you looking more of the ethics behind it?
The ethics. I mean, like how far can you go without really pushing the envelope and maybe doing something illegally?
Exactly.
You shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, if you're true to the word of open source intelligence, what we do, everything is 100% passive. So nothing that would alert the other person. So for example, if a person has a privatized social media account, you would be crossing the line in the OSINT realm if you friend requested them on like a sock puppet account or a fake account. That would be crossing the line in open source intelligence, like friending them and breaching their privacy. But if it's all public and they haven't privatized anything, then it's public for anybody to look at. And that is fully ethical in the realm of OSINT. But there is an ethics if you need a breach, like if you need to send them, for example, some people suggest online, but it's not OSINT related. It's kind of further, and you're kind of breaking in the realm of OSINT, is people like to send IP loggers and emails like, they're trying to make them click on a link. And when they click on the link, it shows us the metadata. Like it shows us what computer they're using, what time zone they're in, what IP address they're from, and stuff like that. That would be a breach of true to the word of open source intelligence. But everything we do is anybody could look it up.
Okay, excellent. Now,
so that's the ethics for sure.
What was it?
No, say it again. Sorry.
Now, when you make use of pictures and video, have you ever made use of like artificial intelligence or machine learning tools, or for that matter, even any computer vision technology to kind of really understand, to kind of give the extra oomph in your analysis?
Yeah. for example, like for if somebody, let's go back to a hit and run with a vehicle, and they have a Ring video camera, and the license plate is almost, you could almost make out the numbers, but it's just poor enough. It seems like every security camera ever is like that, where it's just poor quality enough where you can't make anything out, but it's just high enough quality where you, like, you can see the incident. That's every security camera ever. But we can pull stills and pull that footage, and there's AI programs out there that will forensically just completely change it through AI and clean it up. And it could take like 12 hours of work, and you need a pretty good machine for it to do that. And it will clean it up enough where you could actually make out maybe one or two letters in the license plate. But that's an all AI training itself to clear up the image. And we do have software like that.
Okay. So you do make use of AI then in your... Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, have you worked with any celebrities in Ohio or the Cleveland area?
No celebrities, but I couldn't divulge if I did, but unfortunately none yet.
Oh, of course. Or have you done any work with, like, any multimillionaires in the Cleveland area or anything like that? Or
not in the Cleveland area, though, but USA-based, yeah.
Okay, like they have these big penthouses. Okay, gotcha. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now,
for example, they might want their getaway home privatized, and we would get consultations about that. Let's say they have, because for like if you're a new millionaire or you come upon money, there's a lot to worry about, and some people don't take their privacy as seriously what they should. So for example, you're a millionaire and you want to buy a big home, right? Well, if you don't buy that anonymously, anybody could find out where you live. And that could be a problem, and you might not like that. So the next home you buy, we have consultations where, okay, this is how you can set up an anonymous home. So we guide them through setting up an LLC and as well as purchasing the home through the LLC so that if any of the public data scrapers online scrape it, private LLC and not under the client's real name. So nothing is attached to the client. So stuff like that. So we're really trying to assist their privacy. And we could also purchase an anonymous vehicle through the LLC as well. So if a police officer runs the license plate, your name won't come back. Your LLC will come back. It's like you're purchasing a vehicle, like, from a company, pretty much. That will happen. And another thing is there's not to freak you out or anything, but there's lots of private businesses that their job is to go around and just take pictures of license plates, and they have set up tons of license plate readers, and they offer services to licensed private investigators, other investigators, even private individuals. You can go on there, pay $15, and look up a license plate and see the last time this license plate was taken, like a photo was, and who this license plate comes back to. And it's a private entity like that. And they're everywhere. You don't even know about it. They're taking pictures of license plates constantly.
I don't even know.
And, yeah, it's pretty wild out there.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Now, how do you see OSINT evolving for, like, the rest of the year and going into the future? Is it going to be playing a
big
role?
In the future?
Where do you foresee OSINT?
I would say that it's going to – it's going in the realm of writing scripts and automation. So Python scripting, it's definitely is going to be the future. Automating certain processes is a huge portion of it. So right now, doing things manually, if you could, like, that might take 2 hours. Writing a script that will scrape a bunch of different websites and run a bunch of different data sets for you, that would save you so much time, maybe 20 minutes of work. And people are automating various tasks and methods of OSINT right now through Python. And I think that that's going to be the future.
Okay, wow. Now, what can one do to protect their digital footprint? I mean, what do you tell people? Okay. Normally I tell people, you know, this is one of the last questions I ask guests at the end of the podcast. Like, what do you tell people to mitigate the risks of being a victim of cyber attack? Well, in this realm of OSINT, what do you tell people so that they don't get, like, harassed or stalked or anything like that, or to mitigate that risk?
Yeah, I mean, I always tell my clients to be proactive instead of reactive. Unfortunately, every time I get a phone call, we are in the reactive stage because it's already happening. And it's harder to go back and privatize things and take things down than it is to take the step initially and actively think about your privacy. So I would tell my clients to always private, like, if you, there's different levels of privacy. You can take it as far as you want to take it. You could put your phone in a Faraday cage every day you come home from work if you're going to take it that far. You could purchase anonymous vehicles if you're going to take it that far. It's really because at some point it starts impeding your life. Like, how important is your privacy to you, you know? So I would say privatize all your social medias if you have that. Do not use Facebook. I mean, I have a business Facebook and everything like that, but everything's privatized accordingly and such. But privatize everything. Do not sign up for any kind of, you know, third-party couponing sites, free sweepstakes, because that stuff is just gets scraped and sold to marketing companies, and then it gets posted online, and then people have your name and your phone number associated with you fairly quickly. Getting somebody's personal phone number is so insanely easy because everyone signs up for that new, like, CVS card or Walgreens card or membership card, anything like that. And eventually, that information gets sold and resold enough where it gets publicly online, and there's data sets available that we could run your name for and get all that information. So just making sure that you're not posting anything online that could lead back to your real life or even your friends. That's a big portion of it. If you have a self, like, if you're thinking privacy for yourself and say you're at a party with friends and you are taking the conscious decision not to post any photos or anything like that, but really need to think about the people you're with. Maybe your friend is posting photos on Snapchat or Instagram and tagging the location that this party's at and you're in the background. So really, it's having a conscious mindset of being of the privacy focused deal, and a lot of it is just making sure you're not putting information that you shouldn't. You shouldn't do it.
Yeah,
well,
I'm not a big social person. I just stick to LinkedIn. I mean, I'll go on Facebook to see what's happening, but I don't really do much on any social media because I've come to learn to kind of despise it, except for LinkedIn. But
yeah,
anyway. So what is the best way, Scott, for someone to get a hold of you? If they feel they want your services, they need that initial phone consult, what is the best way to get though? What's the best way for someone to get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can go to cyberoneintel.com, and that has a list of our services, some background, some education for you. You could also reach me on email, scottb@cyberoneintel.com, and we can have a good conversation. If you're having a privacy issue, feel free to have a consult with me. We can get it straightened out and give me some tips on how to remediate your situation for sure. No obligation. If you're a private investigator listening to this or a cybersecurity firm that's looking for an investigator, reach out and we can see what best fits for you. We don't sell on anything that we can't do. It's out of our scope. We are very honest about it, and we can direct you to someone who would best fit your needs for sure.
Well, Scott, we thank you for your time this afternoon. It's truly, as a lightning experience, I didn't realize how powerful OSINT really is and just how, you know, our digital footprint is on the Internet these days. I knew about it, but you really opened my eyes to some other different aspects I didn't know about. I really want to have you on a future podcast. We can talk, do a little bit deeper dive into some of more of what you do exactly. But thanks for your time.
Yeah, I have a bunch of stories.
Hey, if you got any cloak and dagger stories, hey, I'd love to hear them. That'd be awesome. But thanks for your time, and we want you back soon, okay?
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you.
Bye.